Well, welcome, 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 welcome. Welcome back to our podcast, Meeting You Where You Are. This is episode 3, I believe, and I am Chris Simon, and I'm here with...
Jada McCray.
There you go. This is getting better. I like this.
I'm getting used to introducing myself.
Introducing yourself. I know you're used to people always introducing you and the sounds of the trumpets, and you walk down and they throw the Coming to American flowers at your feet.
Yes. I want all the laurels, all the accolades.
Like when he got out the car at the barbershop and they just threw the flowers and he walked in and he went into the barbershop and said, hey, who's going to clean this up?
Yes. Might as well make it a cool million. Go ahead.
Might as well make it a cool million. So, Jada McCray, we're here. It's a beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day.
We have a play therapy CEU training going on right now.
Yep. Yep.
That's awesome. Is this the second one we've done?
Yeah, right? It's through Chesapeake Beach. We have a partnership with them where they use our location and they do CEUs and they help train some of our therapists on getting to learn how to do and implement play therapy techniques. Because we have a very young population, so we treat adults and children, but dealing with children and treating children requires a lot of special training. So we want to make sure they get all of the training that they need so they can do effective interventions. So we use play therapy because oftentimes children express themselves through play. And as they learn, they use play. If you've ever walked in on your children playing with dolls, you know, they're actually acting out family scenarios. And it's so funny when I hear my daughter, she's 4, but when I hear her playing with her dolls, I hear her repeating words that I say.
I just had a flashback moment because I have kids.
Uh-huh.
And I remember some of the play I used to do with my cousin's Barbie dolls.
Uh-huh.
And Ken and Barbie.
Oh, but there you go.
We're not going to go there. But it just made me think that at some day my children may repeat these behaviors.
So what I can say
is... So we're not doing any play. Actually, You know what? They're going to read.
They're just going to read.
Just going to read.
Well, parents should know that to not be too... If you come in and you walk in and you see your children with Barbie dolls and they're kissing, don't. It's not the end of the world. They're doing more explicit things than maybe that's a red flag. But
I'm saying, if that's your son, maybe you're like, all right. If it's your daughter, then you're like, just like, what's going on here? I know it's gender bias. And
somebody said
please
toxic
don't
masculinity
call up
over
and,
here.
Get me suspended like they did Jemele Hill from ESPN for my views. But it's just like wow, you know. I just thought about that like, oh my gosh, my kids will one day may engage or do some of the same stuff that I once did. And that frightens me.
It shouldn't, because that's the thing that's been giving parents a leg up for millennia.
Wow.
It has. I mean, think about it this way. You know how you were at 13. You know how you were at 14. Mm-hmm. So it's helpful, even though your children are separate individuals, it's helpful to be familiar with the behavior. Because it's really best if you understand from the time that your child is a baby that they are autonomous creatures and that they are their own beings and they're their own person. A lot of times we will superimpose ourselves onto our children. And mm-hmm. I think it's biological. I think it's designed that way. You look at them and you, oh, look at your eyes. You have my eyes. You have my ears. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, you'll have a baby that's 2 months old and you'll say something like, he's just like his father. Like mm-hmm. how? How's way? Like how? How is he like his father already? But we'll do that. But that's...
Maybe he whines.
right.
But that's a different topic.
But that builds attachment, you know, to recognize certain traits and stuff in yourself. I mean, that you see in your children. It helps to build attachment. But we have to see them as separate human beings, though, even though they pick up a lot of our stuff.
Yes. I mean, so I think that was a good intro as we talk about when we once were 13 and then just things like that. Because mm-hmm. today our topic is... They look at you strange and say you change. Mm. You know, so I think, you know, obviously we've changed since we were 13, right? Or we would like to think so.
In some regards, yes. But my girlfriend, my homegirl, she found our slam books from when we were in middle school.
What is a slam book?
You don't know what a slam book is?
No.
It's so sad. It's a
oh, the black and white composition book?
It's a composition notebook and you write notes back and forth.
I never got the name brand one.
Yeah, it's not name brand.
Slam was the
no,
brand, right?
No, that would be like Trapper Keeper or something back then.
Look at you.
But
Label dropping.
There you go. Trapper Keeper.
You was good if you had a Trapper Keeper.
You were doing real good. If you had Lisa Frank, you were the truth.
And then when the one with the Velcro on the front,
yes.
And you opened it up and had
yes.
the... and had the pencil holder on. And
see, my mother would bring home notebooks that she got from her office.
Yeah. My mother used to work at Hopkins and give me the old binders.
My mother worked at Hopkins. Hopkins is missing a lot.
White and red
I got
binders.
The old white binders. Hopkins is missing a lot of binders right now.
I'd be the only kid in school with big rings, these huge rings.
Me too.
And everybody else got normal these regular rings.
Listen, that's why I know what a trapper keeper is, because I wanted one.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, so it's just a
book. Did you ever get one?
No. I guess no. I could buy myself one now.
Oh, because you changed.
Because I changed a little bit.
Oh, okay.
That's the means to buy
But isn't that a good thing, though, right?
It is. But so I was saying, though, that in the book, back and forth, it's a slam book is kind of like a gossip book that kids will have in middle school. Now they don't need it because they text back and forth. They have social media and they text. And everybody knows how you feel about everybody. But it was so funny because reading our back and forth exchanges, even though we are really adult women now, a lot of who we are came through, and it was really funny to see some of the things that are consistent.
You want to spill some of the juice or not?
Absolutely not.
I can't get any of it out?
None of it at all.
Oh, man. Was it some crushes in there and everything?
Of course there were crushes. We were 13.
My daughter's 9. Jeez, you're making me think that she actually may have some similar stuff like this going on at some point.
I guarantee that if she's not aware of boys, they're somewhere on the
You know
the
what?
Periphery.
She's going to Roland Park next year. All girls school, everything.
Please. Good luck with that one. I went to Western, and that's an all girls school, but somehow boys seem to find us. So, I mean.
All right, moving forward.
Denial.
So, when people say that you change, right? Uh-huh. It seems like sometimes it comes with a negative context?
Whatever? Connotation.
Connotation. Mm-hmm. I told you that you speak a lot more eloquent than me.
Oh, gracious.
But can you spell it, though?
I was a spelling bee champion. You want to call my mother?
No, I'm going to call your bluff. No, I'm just kidding. So when we talk about change, especially like in an urban community, mm-hmm. it typically comes with like a negative connotation. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is?
Well, I guess as the representative for all of the urban community.
The spokesperson for the urban community.
I can't even go into how many times I felt like the spokesperson for the urban community. But anyway, that's a different topic. But I think that just in general, people don't like change because they're comfortable with the familiar. You know what to expect on a day-to-day basis. And so even though we encourage change, and it's a new buzzword now, and everybody thinks that you should continue to change and change and change and change, and we hear that a lot, and there's a lot of Instagram posts encouraging change. But biologically, and actually from an evolutionary standpoint, if it makes you more comfortable to know what to expect. It's the same reason why we develop stereotypes. It's so that we can kind of size up and know what the unknown is in just an instant.
And prepare yourself. Cuts down on anxiety.
It really does, especially when you have intimate relationships with people. Or it makes you feel more comfortable if you always know what you're going to get. So for instance, if your spouse behaves in a certain way, and you know that every day they come home from work and they kick their shoes off at the door and they sit down and they drink a beer or they watch TV, if all of a sudden he's not coming home from work anymore and his habits change and he's going to hang out at the bar instead of coming home and drink his beer, your red flags go up. Because it's outside of the norm. So
may call us to come sit on the couch to get some relationship advice, right?
They just may.
Well, they're going to have to wait a little bit.
I would suggest it.
That part of it soon, I guess, right?
Yeah, but if you understand what behaviors are and you know if a person veers significantly from their usual behaviors, that's always a concern. That's a concern because you don't know what to prepare yourself for.
I found that with, especially like some friends sometimes, mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily going to say my friends. I feel like I have a good group of well-rounded, open-minded, progressive friends, right? Mm-hmm. But in other settings and other relationships I've seen, it seems that sometimes people don't want you to change because they've grown accustomed to you acting a certain way. Mm-hmm. And sometimes in their mind, they may feel like they have the upper hand, or like you're just this little person. And when you change and you start developing, you start growing, it becomes threatening to them at times, I guess, because it may be an insecurity that they have in themselves that was hidden mm-hmm. or masked because, you know, they were always in a position what they deemed as power. Mm-hmm. Now that you're changing and you're growing and you're developing, it's like, whoa, hold on. I'm not comfortable with this. This is new.
It's a shift in dynamics.
Like, now I may no longer have that control or mm-hmm. that leverage over you now, mm-hmm. you know, because now you can think for yourself.
Yeah.
Now you can pay for yourself. Mm-hmm. You have new friends that mm-hmm. that are hanging out, and you're getting new attention and different things like that, you know?
Well, what you'll hear is, and it's interesting that you said leverage, because there's something, a behavior that people do, it's called leveling. So if they think that you've gotten a little too big for your britches, what they'll often do is try to bring you back down and just cut you down a couple of notches so that they feel more comfortable.
You know, britches actually used to be, it was a pair of jeans.
Yes.
I used to have them back in the day as well.
You remember that store, Britches?
The Britches in store, Towson? Yeah. They look at you strange and say you changed. Because now Jada, she gets her polo dresses and
stuff. Oh my goodness. I wear American designers. There's nothing wrong with that. It's good quality at a good price.
Good wholesome price. Good wholesome garment.
He makes me so sick.
We got these Coming to America quotes going on today.
I love it.
But yeah, they will try to cut you down, you know. And
yeah.
And it's like that crab in the barrel mentality. They don't want to see you grow. Mm-hmm. But everybody, if you weren't, it's almost like the catch 22, like it's a, I guess you will call it a quagmire type of thing, if I'm using that word correctly. If you're not doing anything, then they call you a bum and say that you're not, you don't have any goals, you don't care, you're not doing anything with your life, you need to be motivated. And then when you are, it's like, oh, you just think that you're somebody now, you're changing and all this other stuff.
Listen,
you know?
It's a common human experience to change, but one of the things that I've realized in my evolution, my personal evolution, is that I can't live my life based on other people's comfort levels. Mm. And I can't stop my growth based on other people's comfort levels.
Gotcha. That's awesome. Speaking of, so that we can add a bit more of historical context, where are you from, so that we can figure out, talk about the change evolution, the change process.
Where am I from?
Where are you? Where did you grow up, and what was the norms or like just the environment like?
Well, my birth certificate says McCullough Holmes.
McCullough Holmes?
Yes, it does.
Oh, okay.
And I say it with pride. Hey,
they no longer exist anymore.
No, McCullough Holmes is still there.
No. You know, I was thinking about the buildings that
Lafayette?
Lafayette, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yeah. But but it's so funny that you talk about that evolution and growth. Part of the reason I was telling you before that I'm an Army brat, and part of the reason why I'm an Army brat is because
I'm sorry, I just got put on that brat part. I didn't hear the Army part.
No, it was because my parents realized that where we were living, it was changing again. Mm-hmm. And this was in the 80s when crack was introduced into Baltimore and the heroin epidemic really took off. And my father joined the Army. And so, speaking of change, he got us out of there. And so when we came back to Baltimore, when I was about 9 and a half. And I ended up growing up, I grew up on 38th Street in Greenmount.
Greenmount.
Mm-hmm.
So what was it like around Greenmount? What was your life growing up then? Were there a lot of college educated individuals?
No, you know what? There were some, but what I'll tell you is this. If nothing else, that's why I said it's interesting about change. It taught me to be adaptable, because when we lived in McCullough Homes, it was relatively safe for what I knew. There were some things, like I had this terrifying fear of helicopters and ambulances, because my mother would tell us that if we heard that, we need to run in the house because the police are trying to look for somebody.
Oh, wow.
And so it was in for years, but then that same fear translated when I moved to an Army base, which was very safe because at that time they were preparing for Desert Storm. And so on Army bases, it's a little bit different than the rest of the world, because you hear about wars that may not have at the very beginning before they reach anybody else. And so you are preparing and thinking about war and people who have guns and, you know, all of the soldiers and stuff. So I went from that environment to, again, moving into the city where when we come back, things had gotten pretty bad in Baltimore by then.
Yeah.
And so I've become adaptable. I mean, I've, you know, made myself into a person where, you know me, I pretty much adapt very quickly. Mm-hmm. But that's because of all of the shifting and moving.
You don't maladapt?
I don't maladapt, no. I use my COPA skills, bro.
Okay. That's my word, maladapt.
Maladaptive, I know.
But just touch on the neighborhood a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Were there a lot of people with, like, corporate jobs?
No.
Were there a lot of business owners?
No.
College graduates?
Very, very few and far between.
What about masters?
No.
Licensed social workers?
No. I didn't know anything about a master's degree until I got to college and really understood.
So basically, who you are as an 27 year old.
You might want to add a couple numbers on it.
I was trying to be nice here, you know.
Listen, I wear it with pride.
Okay, well,
I'm moisturized.
As a 62 year old.
62.
Nah, I'm just kidding.
That's a fair 62.
But no, as a grown, mature, older woman at this point, who you are now is substantially different than who you were at that time and what you probably aspire to be, judging from the people in your community.
Mm-hmm.
How is that? So when that has happened, how have people looked at you and said things, and what was the, because where I'm from the Alameda, not too far from Greenmount, very similar socioeconomic situations. And I went to Lake Clifton High School. And hey, what do you know about the bridge?
I dated people that went to Lake Clifton.
C&D, you look like you dated somebody over C&D. you know, you definitely ain't dating nobody over A&B. What they said. Don't be mad at me, Lake Clifton people. But the smarter people were over A&B. C&D was just a lot more ruthless.
Listen, I love brains. Go ahead.
So where I grew up, and at Lake Clifton, a lot of the individuals there didn't graduate from Lake Clifton. You know, we might have had a very large freshman class, maybe, and it was one of the largest in history there. But come graduation, we only had like 50 some people, I believe, graduate. And out of those 50 some, at that time, I believe like 1/4 of them went to a 4-year university. So I know where I am in my life now, honestly, and a lot of the people where I grew up from are either dead or in jail, and you know, they, you know, the statistics say you're not even supposed to be successful, or you're supposed to have a entry level job, and some, you know, and that's,
you're not supposed to be an entrepreneur.
Yes,
let alone
with
multiple,
and that's
businesses.
No shade at anyone else, because
no, I understand.
You know, I'm just talking about, I wasn't supposed to be an entrepreneur. I wasn't supposed to, you know, I'm not going to go through my extensive resume. I'm just kidding.
Do have limited
but I'm
time.
Not going to go through, I'm not going to go through my resume.
Waxing
but
poetically.
They said that, you know, we're not supposed to be where we are now.
Yeah.
So what was that change? And I know some of the things that I've experienced and listened to or heard say about me or whatever in that process. What was it like for you? What have people said about your change?
You know, what's really funny is I think that I have had to become more comfortable with it, because I'm one of those people, and I don't want to in any way toot my horn, but I always tell people that I was a natural social worker. And so I've always wanted to help people and be there for people and do it individually and do it face to face. But now I do it on a more macro level. And so I've not been able to engage the way that I once engaged. I've got to come up with programming and different opportunities for us to be able to help other people. And so not doing the actual day-to-day work with seeing people and helping people has been a big shift for me. And I think that sometimes people take that as distancing yourself away from the populations that you serve, and that could not be further from the truth. What I realized, and this was difficult for me to let go, was that not doing face-to-face services anymore didn't mean that I did not still care and have a heart to help people. What it said was that I received the training that I needed, and it was the growth. And whenever I tried to remain working with the population directly, I realized that all of the know-how that I gained, all of the experience that I gained, I made it small, and I wasn't able to help more people. And so when you know things and you know what opportunities are out there and you understand program development and how to grow things, then you're able to impact and put more people in places to help even more people. Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense.
Okay.
But you're not dishing the dirt. What if people actually said?
So if you're talking about me being a business owner now.
No, just in general. Okay. Just what if people said about you, you know, judging from where they might have known you from before to seeing this, you know, maturation of Jada McCray.
So it runs the gamut. It goes all the way from, I always knew you could, I always knew you would, and I always think to myself, have you met me before? Because I had no clue. So it runs from that to, you know, people not necessarily being the happiest for me. And that's really, I think that's the thing that I had to become more comfortable with, is that when you do become successful, at least in some circumstance, and I always think, it's not even like I'm Oprah, what is this about? But when you do become successful in some regard, not everybody is happy about that. And that can come as a surprise to you, and it can be very hurtful at times.
Especially because you know the way that you, I know for me, I want to see everybody win.
Yeah.
So when, you know, sometimes people don't give me the same vibe. It's like, whoa, what have I ever done to you, you know?
But I had to laugh, and I told my girlfriend one day, I said, you know, it's funny. I said, it's lonely at the middle. It's like I said, it's not like I'm Oprah out this piece. Like, it's lonely at the middle.
That's funny. But even at the middle, if that's what the term you want to use it, it's still where someone aspires to be, you know?
Oh, I never take it for granted.
Yeah, yeah. And I know for me, I've heard, you know, it started off negative. It started off very negative, not from my friends, but from some people that, like, may have been more your senior or your elder, and then mm-hmm. you're changing, you're embarking on territory that they used to dominate or was a lot more knowledgeable mm-hmm. in. So it came with some resistance, like, you know, like, it's a bad thing, you know? Yeah. But honestly, some of the responses I've been getting recently and just in general, people like seeing, especially when you're doing it for the community and stuff like that, they want to see you do well.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some people that might think that you are too vocal or that you're too flamboyant.
Well, Chris, you are shiny.
I am not shiny. I am not shiny. I am, I don't know what word. Uh-huh. Okay, whatever. But I'm saying some people, even just from a business growth level, people mm-hmm. don't want to see you reach a level before they get to that level.
Yeah.
Not knowing that if you get to that level, you could potentially open the door for them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's best that if you got something good going on, that they encourage it, because you can, you know, reach back and pull mm-hmm. someone up. You know how, you know, we have friends that have other outpatient mental health clinics or other agencies. And one of my buddies, I was telling him, hey, I'll talk to our psychiatrist
mm-hmm.
to see if she knows someone else
mm-hmm.
because, you know, maybe she could help you guys out.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, wow, you're really going to do that? And I'm like, yes, because while our agency is doing well now,
mm-hmm.
I want to see you win as well. One, mm-hmm. I want to see people I know succeed, period.
But we have
but
to be.
But then in addition to that, you never know that the blessing that something that I'm pouring into someone else,
mm-hmm.
how that's going to impact their life and when it's going to impact their life. They may become successful and now they may have a waiting list and we may be doing not as good and mm-hmm. we may need them at some point to help us.
Mm-hmm.
But then also I look at it as if I pour into someone else's life and open up a door, I never know if I don't, it may block a blessing that may have been coming down the pike for me, you know?
Yes.
And that's just how I view it, but not everyone does.
You know, I think that if we're talking about specifically African Americans in our community and business owners in African American communities, we've been taught or in either directly or indirectly that there's only so much, that there's not enough to go around.
Yeah.
And it's just not true.
You got to keep your...
Yeah, you've got to keep it to yourself.
Keep your ideas to yourself.
Yeah,
you got to...
Like you said before,
how you did it.
The crabs in the barrel mentality. But I believe that an awakening is happening, and I noticed this particularly with my friends and the people that I socialize with, that there's an understanding that there can be a community and a working together and a partnership that people can form. And if we're doing everything we can for the good of our community, there's more than enough for everyone. I'm willing to help anyone who wants to. In particular, everybody knows that I have a heart for Baltimore for all of the reasons that I named before. But I'm willing to help and do for anyone that is willing to help and do for Baltimore. And if we're all on the same page, meaning that we want to heal hearts and minds,
mm-hmm.
then why not support each other?
I'm with you. But I want to get back into a little bit of the historical context to mm-hmm. try to, because I feel like we can't fix it
mm-hmm.
until we at least understand it.
Sure.
Do you think that some of this mentality is like from like slavery mentality? I know like that Willie Lynch theory and how you, how they may have lynched people and beat them in front of people so that they knew not to run away, or created this interracial racism and stuff mm-hmm. like that, and just created an environment where subsisting was all you should ever think about doing, and anything different than that, you're like stepping out on uncharted territory, and that's a no-no.
So I'll go even further than I'll say this: as far as slavery is concerned, you didn't want to you kind with mothers in particular, they have accounts where mothers would try to downplay the attributes of their children because they felt like if they were up, they would talk about them and edify them enough, then they would come to the attention of the master and would then be sold. And so you would kind of downplay the attributes of the children. And so after the slaves were freed and Reconstruction, Black people united together and built whole communities. Mm-hmm. And they were actually thriving. So they were elected into office, built whole communities, the same way that we see a lot of other minorities come to the country and start to build within their own communities. Mm-hmm. So you had people who were successful and thriving Black communities. So what happened was that shortly after Reconstruction, the same thing did not happen to the people who were the oppressors. And so the oppressors saw that the Black people were now thriving and then began to go into the neighborhoods and destroy the neighborhoods and burn them down. And so then you had a reign of terror that happened with our ancestors where people were hung and people were lynched. And then you were taught to do better, to not do better. Does that make sense?
No, 100%.
So if you are used to building, if you were building, come together as a community to not only survive, but to thrive, and then people were literally murdered and killed in the most heinous ways possible, what do you then tell your children after that? You're afraid to build again.
Yeah.
And then in a lot of ways, it still holds over to now. Black people have not truly been free until the 1980s. And then you have to think about this. That's when the crack epidemic happened. So it's not just been one thing. It was slavery. It was Reconstruction. It was Jim Crow. So all through history. So when you think about the freedom of Black people and people say, well, why aren't they? And I don't know, you know, what this thought is about why aren't Black people thriving and doing better than what people believe we should be, because it's almost 400 years. It's over 400 years after slavery. The thought is, you have to understand that there's trauma there. And they've been doing a lot of research on epigenetics that shows that Black people are traumatized down to their epigenetics.
Look at you trying to be so fancy.
Oh, Lord. Fancy. It shows that there's trauma down to the DNA.
I'm hating on you. You're changing. You need you need to use layman terms.
That's ridiculous. You know what?
You need to use two-syllable words. I don't like that you're changing and using these
big
words.
I'm sorry. Let's just say trauma genes. So Black people literally have trauma down into their DNA. Uh-huh. So when you talk about this crabs in a barrel thing, it is a survival mechanism to downplay, to not do well, to fit in, to say that, to fit the narrative that is safe, because that's the safe narrative.
So my thing is that I feel like a lot of this change issue comes from insecurities in oneself.
Definitely so.
So I believe that you're insecure about where you are, not happy, and you don't want to see someone else do better, or something that they're doing exposes a weakness that you may have in yourself. But however, I'm curious to get your opinion to find out, do you feel like women now are more scrutinized about change because of, you know, the disparity between like men and women roles and how it's changing and all that other stuff? So when women are changing now, and it's even more scrutinized?
So my generation anyway, we grew up watching our mothers go to work. And so we grew up watching our mothers go to work. We were told to get educated. I was told to get an education. I was told mm-hmm. that was the only way, it was to get an education. And I was also told that I could never rely on a man to take care of me and that I was equal to men. And so you can't tell me on the one hand that I have to get an education, I have to work, I have to also raise a family, and then tell me I'm not a boss. Because mm-hmm. believe me, the little girls that are growing up now, they are raised to believe that they are bosses.
Yeah.
And so you can't give them two different points of view. You can't say, oh, you're a boss, but you have to be a gentle boss. What the heck? What does that mean anyway?
Well, but what I'm asking is, if you were a man, do you feel that the same change would be criticized the same way that you get criticized now? For
absolutely
change?
Not. You hear it yourself. You always... you know, we hear information about me. We always hear feedback that I'm very straightforward mm-hmm. about things. And I always say that if I were a man, no one would even notice that I was straightforward. Mm-hmm. If by being straightforward, you mean that I'm concise and I tell the truth, mm-hmm. Particularly when we have business matters, then why is that a bad thing?
So if you change from being quiet, if you were a little bit more
I've never been quiet.
Yeah, true.
Not soft spoken.
But if you
either.
Were a little bit more soft spoken and now you're being more authoritative and you're advocating for yourself as a woman, do you feel like they will be overly scrutinized about change? Like, whoa, you're changing. This is
Oh yeah, there's one word used to describe and to discourage women for being that way. It's called a bitch.
Whoa.
Yeah.
This is a PG rated show. No, I'm just kidding.
That's just a word. But yes.
And women get called that. And
it's used to discourage women from being assertive, from being for being straightforward, for being bosses. It's if you don't want to be viewed in that way, it's thought that you have to be somehow soft. Or there are times and places where I can be soft and I am allowed to be free and I'm allowed to, you know, just and feel very, I'll say, womanly. Mm-hmm. But and the office is not one of those places.
Okay. So, question. We've talked about where we believe that it started from and different factors that may lead to this negative connotation of change.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do we change this, though? How do we change the issue of change?
I think it's actually it's something that is happening organically because I think that with people, more people in our community becoming aware of mental health and becoming aware of their own internal dialogues and being aware of the dysfunctions that may be in their families and even society, I think that people are more comfortable with people being their best selves and changing and developing.
And I think it's also evolving. It's been like a subliminal call to action.
Because I think we realize we can't continue this way.
Yeah, that is needed. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, then we're going to be like lost in the dust, you know?
It's obvious. I think every now and then in history, there comes a time where we realize that there has to be radical change. And we as a society, our zeitgeist kind of changes, our worldview changes. And we realize that there has to be radical change and quickly. Otherwise, things are going to be disastrous. And that's not to scare anybody. History goes through these points. If you study history, there are many points in our history where we still survive. We're all still here. But radical change is necessary. So now, we have to embrace it.
Speaking of the change in the urban community, and I know I'm going to wrap this part up shortly, but do you think that Obama played a big part? I mean, his thing was a change you can believe in, first African-American president, and now us talking about how people view change in the urban community and how you feel like it's coming around to a more acceptable and method and a good thing to do. Do you think that Obama played a big part in that?
Absolutely. My son is 9 years old.
I thought you were about to say not.
After No.
I was about to say absolutely not.
No, he definitely did. My son is 9, and Obama was voted in 2008. He was the only president my son had ever known.
Was
a black president. So to him, that's something that was an impossibility for me growing up.
How is that now almost like the norm for him?
Exactly, which is why I believe that what's going on with our society right now in our country, it's almost like you feel it's almost a flare-up because people can't go back to the way that it was before.
Yeah.
And so when you have that and you realize that it's a possibility, how do you then return to a place of that's never going to happen again?
Yeah. And the way I like to view change is that it's a good thing. It's a needed thing, like what we were talking about yesterday. If it rained outside consistently and the sun came out and crops and flowers never grew, that's a problem.
That's a problem.
That would be an irrigation problem.
Mm-hmm.
So you work to do these things. These things are supposed, with the right elements and doing the right things, it's supposed to yield the outcome of change.
Absolutely.
So if I go to work and I want to work hard, or if I want to study, or if I just want to just be the best me, there should be a manifestation of the work that I've been putting in.
Yeah.
That should be a lot different than what it was prior to the work.
You know, one of the phrases that I love right now is glow up.
Did you like my manifestation word?
I like your manifestation.
Hey, you come with these big words. I gotta look into my thesaurus.
I like glow up, and I like it because it kind of it references it's a positive of I've changed and glow I've up, changed for the better.
Up. Yeah, you like it because it's Meek Mill.
Whatever.
He has a song called Glow Up.
You know I like Meek Mill, but I like it because it's a positive and it encourages change and it encourages you to grow.
Yeah.
And I think when they throw glow in there, it's just like kind of shiny. So I like that too.
You like but shiny stuff.
I love shiny stuff.
Yes.
But I think that it encourages people to change and evolve into something bigger and something that they feel is better into them, their best selves.
So glow up is glow good. Up. Yeah. I see it now.
Like, and you grow into your destiny.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes who you were before is not big enough to handle the destiny that you have before you. So you got to grow into it.
Yes. And you got to glow up.
You got to glow up.
So speaking of, we're going to segue this into, I think we may need to put a pin in this. We may need to come back and revisit this.
There is so much that we need to talk about. And you got me excited because, you know, I love history. And
I didn't know you was this great history buff.
Well, you know, I like to read. So yes. You got me talking about Reconstruction and epigenetics. We could do a whole episode on epigenetics alone.
Oh, gosh. Use the words I know. What is it? Genes? What is it?
It's genes. It's just imagine a traumatized gene.
Okay.
So traumatized down to your DNA.
Yes. Those are words I understand.
Okay.
So please do not change.
All right.
And start using these big fancy words. But no, literally, I think this is something that we can revisit at a later time. Mm-hmm. And I would love to. Maybe we'll bring somebody on to discuss it further.
Sure.
Somebody that's, you know, maybe accomplish some things, maybe a public figure, somebody mm-hmm. we could talk about the change that they're trying to bring about and what has been their plight to success and what has that brought about.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But speaking of change, we're now going to change directions and proceed to our next section, which is called On the Couch. I got it today. On the Couch or the Chaise Lounge, depending on what office you're in. So yes, we're going to talk about on the couch, sofa, couch. Okay.
Couch.
On the couch. And today's topics of on the sofa couch, I think we just might have to make it a chase.
Listen, we are from Maryland. It's mid-Atlantic. We can say sofa.
Okay.
You can say on the sofa.
In LA, it might be the couch.
It might be the couch.
All right. So on the couch. Just see, when you tell me I can say it, then now I get it right.
You just want to argue with me and not be on the same page.
You just reverse psychology me.
That's what I did.
Yeah. All right, but on the couch today, you're the last few sessions, Jada has been the therapist, providing the on the couch sessions and advice.
Mm-hmm.
But today we're gonna have yours truly, the love doctor.
Oh my gosh.
Chris Simon. And we're gonna be operating from a relationship. Marriage counseling type of perspective today. And this is funny because I was talking about that my wife and I were headed to relationship marriage counseling, mm-hmm. and which we like to do in good times, bad times, and, you know, even okay times to discuss
that's
old
awesome.
Stuff, new stuff, and, you know, whatever stuff. Mm-hmm. So people were responding like, wow, you know, I wish a lot of people would talk about this more often. This is like the thing you can't talk about, that your relationship is not good because of Instagram and, mm-hmm. and not that it's not good, but mm-hmm. that from time to time you have differences.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it would be a good thing that if I became the counselor.
Okay.
And I'll field some questions. We had some people call in. Well, we didn't have, I'm not even going to lie, we have nobody call in.
Somebody,
we have some people
questions.
Send us some questions and emails and asking how can they do different things, and they want to get information from the love. I can't call myself a doctor, but the love therapist, the relationship counselor. I'm not a relationship counselor. I'm just knowledgeable in all these different things. So was this the first question?
How do you rebuild trust after infidelity?
Wow. You know, Jada, I got to put my great clinical voice on. Well, you know, Jada, voice. That is you're my midnight, my LaDawn Black midnight voice. Well, trust is a big thing.
Oh, my gosh.
But no, honestly, that is a great question because, you know, once trust is a very fragile thing, you know, mm-hmm. it takes time to build it, but it takes no time to lose it, you mm-hmm. know. And once you lose that trust from someone, it's a very difficult thing to get past.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of relationships never get past trust. People always like, I can't trust them no more.
Yeah.
I can't look at you the same,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I think that if we take away what the social norm is of or what somebody else would do,
mm-hmm.
and we personalize it to us,
mm-hmm.
not what would everyone else do in that situation, mm-hmm. because everyone isn't in this situation.
Sure.
People always say, oh, I would have left them.
Mm-hmm.
But you never know until you're in a situation.
Sure.
Because there are a lot of factors. You know, you guys have kids. You could be financially dependent on each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it might not weigh that much to you mm-hmm. as it may weigh to someone else.
Sure.
So I think that you just have to really, like, personalize the situation. And then figure out if this is something that you can deal with.
Exactly.
If this is something that you can really deal with. But I think that in order for trust to be regained, there has to be closure on that situation. Mm-hmm. Now, closure is not an overnight process.
No, I'm sure not.
It's something that you... A lot of times people apologize, mm-hmm. but they don't ask for forgiveness. Mm. Forgiveness is a big thing. And when you apologize, you have to ask for forgiveness. Sure. Because when you're admitting fault, yes, I am sorry. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't, because you're sorry, doesn't mean I forgive you. Mm-hmm. But when you ask for forgiveness, that person has to be willing to say, yes, I will forgive you, you know? Mm-hmm. And when they do that, like I said, it might not be an overnight process. There are going to be memories that come back up mm-hmm. when you see somebody that looked like that person. What made them want to be with them and not me? Mm-hmm. It's going to be a lot of questions that come up, but you have to keep your thoughts grounded that I told this person I would forgive them. So now the onus is on me
to
get past the situation. Mm-hmm. And it's a daily process. Mm-hmm. But I do agree that you would have to go to counseling would be a good thing. Mm-hmm. And that you need to fully discuss it.
Yeah.
Because there were probably some issues mm-hmm. that led to the infidelity. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, whether it was displeasure or gratification mm-hmm. in whatever capacity. Mm-hmm. It may have been something else that they saw and they liked that someone else lacks.
Sure.
And you have to get down to the root of what that issue was that led to that mm-hmm. and figure out if you're willing to change to be more of what may have led that person to go that way.
Yeah.
Or if that person that's responsible have to understand that that's what I thought was important mm-hmm. and that's not really important mm-hmm. and this is what I really want. Mm-hmm. So I think that
that's important.
I think that if you do those things, you can work to get past, you know, the potentially the infidelity.
And also I think having a very honest conversation with yourself about, do you trust yourself enough to be able to handle it
yes.
if it happens again? Because the biggest predictor of future behavior is past behavior. And once you know that a person it has the ability to be unfaithful to you or to have an encounter outside of your relationship, then you have to ask yourself, if this happens again, will this kill me? Because heartbreak, that's why they call it heartbreak, because it feels like your heart is breaking and yeah. you're going to die.
Yeah.
And so you have to ask yourself, it's not so much do I trust the other person, but do I trust myself enough that if this happens again, I'll be able to survive it?
Yeah.
Can I take a blow a second time?
Yeah. And can I forgive the blow that I've been dealt without yes. needing to return one myself?
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
I'm on fire here. Give me another one.
Bye.
Give me another question.
We've got one live from the couch, and it says, I've been dating a guy for about 7 years, and I'm afraid that he won't ask me to marry him. I feel stuck because I've put so much time in, and I don't want to leave out of impatience to start over. However, I don't want to settle. What should I do?
I think I have a good idea who that question may have come from. No.
You know who asked that question?
No, I'm just kidding. That is a good question. That is a question that a lot of women have to deal with. Mm-hmm. Men typically don't, because we're the one to ask the question.
I think that men decide they want to get married and then they find somebody
to
marry.
Let me ask you this, though. With women growing, and not from my words, but, you know, are growing in the work field, growing mm-hmm. in the place of society, and women bosses, like you said, mm-hmm. at some point, will women start proposing to men?
Women always have proposed to men. And in a lot of ways, I think women still do in a subtle way. Most of the time,
they give you hints that you want you to propose.
Men ask the question because we let you know.
But would they ever go buy a ring and say, hey, here's your wedding band, you know?
So as progressive as I like to believe myself to be, mm-hmm. I'm not that progressive.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, back to the couch. That is a good question. Like we said, that's a question that a lot of women unfortunately have to deal with. Mm-hmm. But I think the answer comes down to is how willing are you to stay and how much do you love that person, you know? Mm-hmm. If a person hasn't proposed to you yet, not necessarily a bad thing, you know? If mm-hmm. they might not be ready. A lot of times people like to rush into a marriage or into a relationship. Mm-hmm. They want to have a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
They not necessarily want to have a marriage.
Two different things.
Two totally different things. One is very expensive.
Yeah.
Well, both are very expensive.
Listen.
They both require a lot of planning and work.
A wedding yes. is about romance. A family is about commitment and family.
And marriage is about working it out. Being in the trenches, going through these things and being committed. And it's about a relationship.
Yep.
A wedding is about a day. So a lot of people want to rush into marriage. I mean, what rush into and have a wedding and be married because in theory, this is at a certain age I should be married.
But she's been waiting 7 years, Chris.
Let me just finish. But at a certain age, I'm supposed to be married. At a certain point in my life, it's supposed to happen. At this point in a relationship, it should, you know? Mm-hmm. But you never know. Just because they've been married 7 years doesn't, we don't know how much stuff they've gone through or what place the temperament and the place that their relationship is in that will warrant someone to feel like they need to be married. He might not feel like that. He may feel like he still needs to work on himself or that he's not where he may want to be in his life to be able to marry someone, to provide or to just, not even financially, but just a peace of mind that can be suitable to be in a relationship with. It sounds like I'm advocating for the guy's case. But that is not
Don't worry, ladies. I got you.
But that is not it. Honestly, what I would say, what is the question? What should she do? Well, I think that she should have a real life conversation with him and let him know that, hey, you know, this is where I see myself. This is where I view our relationship. Where do you? So that there is not this, because a lot of times we'll build up feelings because we assume that this is what someone feels. Or they don't want to marry me. Or they must don't like me, or they're afraid to be in a relationship where it may be something totally different. So I think it should start with a conversation to get an understanding of what's happening here.
Okay.
What are your goals? Where do you see your life in a few years? And then if their plan is something that you can is consistent with their behavior and where they where you see them growing to, and this is something that you can deal with, then maybe stick in there. But then if not, you know, it, nobody wants to feel like they wasted time in a relationship. However, what I would also encourage people is that you're not wasting time. You're learning from that relationship. You're growing from that relationship.
Yeah, 7 years worth of knowledge.
7 years worth of knowledge. Is there anything like some of the old relationships I've been in? Those 7 years are 14 years worth of knowledge.
Oh, good Lord. Listen, Chris, that's from a male's perspective. From a woman's perspective, I got to say, you got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them.
You got to go?
No, I'm just, if you, if, but by year seven, they've had a conversation about marriage and if the two of them see themselves married. You don't think so? If he hasn't asked in 7 years, I think that it's...
But they might have been together since 17 and now they're 24 and they just feel like he's not where they want to be. It may be a holdout to buy the right ring or something like that. You never know.
But I think that if you allow a ring to stop you from getting married to somebody that you want to build a life with, you can always get a new ring later. Or if you want, if
but
you
are we
going
to be honest? Because there are some women who want to wait and have this fairy tale wedding and have the big rock and all this other stuff, and they're not willing to accept it, the whole marriage and relationship part without it.
That goes back to whether or not you want a wedding or you want a marriage. Because if you want a marriage, you know, I don't like want to put my whole relationship out there, but my husband and I, we got together very young.
And
yes, we met at IHOP. Thank you, Chris, for always bringing that up. But we also, and he'll say this, and I'll say this too, we laugh about it now. We also lived in a moldy apartment together.
No.
You know what I mean? And so we went to, we went to college together. We really did. And so, you know, I think about that, but I was willing to be in a moldy apartment with him.
Yes.
Because I loved him.
So he needed to put a ring on it fast then.
No. He, I mean, you know, he let me know early on, and he was a young guy, but he let me know early on that he wanted to get married. And I knew that I always wanted to, at some point, be married. I wasn't necessarily in a rush to get married, but I knew that marriage and children were in my future, and it's what I wanted. And he also knew that marriage and children was in his future. So we were very lucky to have found each other young. And I'm not saying that everybody's on the same page. But what I will say is that what you want for your future, if he doesn't want something very similar in his future, then you're kind of wanting somebody to be other someone other than who they are. And fish got to swim.
Exactly.
If he's a bachelor for life and he just likes the comforts of your relationship.
So that's what I was saying. I think you need to talk about goals, because one of the biggest things, goals and expectations.
Yes.
Because one of the biggest things in relationships that people don't do is discuss expectations. So they head into a relationship or they head into a marriage with different expectations that she's going to cook every night, he's going to take out the trash. And when these things don't happen, then it creates further issues. So expectations prior to getting proposed to are very important so that you can know where you stand. Like, mm-hmm. how long do you expect to be engaged or?
Yes.
Because he could propose. But when the wedding happens, who knows?
Who knows?
That rhyme.
Forever fiance. That rhyme. Yeah. Look at you.
Yeah,
spitting
bars. Bars.
Bar. Spitting bar.
But no, he could propose and it never comes to light. You know, yeah. Nothing ever happens after mm-hmm. that. And I've seen that happen in time. So
it's
the biggest thing is have that expectation conversation and be honest and real with each other. Mm-hmm. Don't put a facade on and just say what the other person wants to hear. Mm-hmm. Have that real, honest conversation. Discuss expectations. And from there, you can decide if this is a place that you want to stay or do you need to go? Mm-hmm.
My heart breaks for women in these situations. My husband and I, we had a year after I finished school that we knew that we wanted to get married sometime after. So I spent a year in suspense wondering when he was going to propose. And I can only imagine that year after year after year. That would drive me insane.
Yeah, my wife, she kind of knew it was coming. Mm-hmm. But everything that was happening, she would always get disappointed. And I find myself going out and happy, having a good time, and we come home. Like, she's angry. And I'm just like, yo, what happened
because
here?
Because it's Valentine's Day. Yeah, you didn't propose now.
No, really. It really was that. Or we went out to dinner with my family and nothing happened. Or it was my birthday and I got excited.
And like, well, these were you never said surprise my... and pulled out a watch.
Yeah. I guarantee you she would tell you the story watch. And just be like completely let down. I'm like, that wasn't my fault. But if we would have had an expectation conversation, I guarantee that would have eliminated and eased some of her anxiety worry about the situation.
Yeah.
So, Jada, you know what? I'm going to cool off. I'm on fire right now. I'm not even going to handle any more
Can
questions.
I call you Dr. Chris even though you're not a doctor?
You can call me Dr. Chris.
I think I'm going to call you Dr. Love.
Well, I'm president.
Bye.
Of the School of Social Work.
You are. So you can't be Mr. President and a doctor.
So no, I'm saying I'm pretty sure I'm probably going to get an honorary doctorate at some point.
I can't.
You don't think so?
You know what? I don't put limits on anything.
You just don't want me to be a doctor because you're thinking about going back to get your doctorate.
We'll see.
We'll see about that.
I think Dr. Jada McCray sounds nice.
No, that means you change. I need you to stay the same. But anyway, I guess this is going to conclude our episode, right?
All right.
Any new things coming up? Anything coming up we got coming up?
We've got a lot of new things coming up.
Oh, we have that training coming up here.
Yes, we do.
The DSS training.
Yep. It's the CBT Partnership, Partnering for Success training, where DSS workers and therapists are going to be co-trained together to learn how to work together so that we can help more people and have similar interventions. So
we
can be
change agents.
Listen, we want to be change agents. We want to make sure that people's mental health needs are taken care of and that those processes don't have to be further traumatizing.
Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, once again, this was our podcast, Meeting You Where You Are.
Mm-hmm. Episode 3.
Next time, we'll discuss something different. So please email us with some of your thoughts or ideas. I don't know the email address. We'll have that formalized by the next one. But just go to our website, www.btscservices.com, and just in our info or contact us, send in your requests. We definitely will value your opinion. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.